Hello and welcome to Healthy Mind, Healthy Life with your host Avik. This podcast is all about exploring the latest research, sharing personal stories and providing personal tips for improving our mental health and well-being. Each episode will be joined by experts in the field of mental health as well as individuals who have experienced the transformative power of a healthy mind firsthand. Together, we will dive into a range of topics from managing stress and anxiety to building resilience and cultivating happiness. So, join us on this journey to discover new ways to take care of our minds, bodies, and souls. And let's work together to create a healthier, happier world one episode at a time. So, let's get started. Hello and welcome to Healthy Mind, Healthy Life. I'm your host Avik, and today where we dive deep into the transformative power of resilience and the self-discovery. Today we are honored to have Furkan Dandia join us. So welcome to the show, Furkan.
Thank you. Appreciate being here, and thank you for inviting me on.
Lovely. So Furkan, like before we start our conversation, I would love to mention this to all of our listeners that Furkan is a therapist, author, speaker, and coach who's dedicated to making a difference in people's lives. So his journey is nothing short of inspiring, sort of like from navigating the challenges of divorce to finding his purpose in the mental health advocacy. So he's emerged as a beacon of hope for the others. So why to wait for? Let's join us as we explore his story of the resilience, vulnerability, and the pursuit of self-love. So welcome to the show again, Furkan.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you again.
Lovely. So Furkan, to start with, if you can share how your personal journey, including your experience with the divorce and that led you to pursue a career in therapy and mental health advocacy.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for me, when I started going through a divorce, I had actually started the process of therapy before that whole process started for me. So it was kind of good that I had already started therapy, because I don't know if I would have sought it out while I was going through a divorce, because it was just, there's so many stressors and so many things happening at once. So going through therapy, I think I worked with three or four different therapists throughout that time frame. I'd say in that span of maybe 4 or 5 years. And each therapist kind of met me where I was at that time in my life. So initially, the therapist was just listening to me. And then slowly, I started working with therapists that would often challenge me and bring a lot of things to my attention. So it wasn't even that I started only discovering things that were happening to me in the moment. I started to then start focusing on things from my past, my childhood, that I hadn't healed. And all of those things just started coming to the surface. And it was very important for me to pay attention to those. As I was going through this whole journey of therapy, I started realizing how there was a stigma around it. Even for myself, I wouldn't talk about it with a lot of people. I wouldn't share it. And I think there was additional pressure that I put on myself, both from a cultural and societal perspective around being a man and trying to keep it together, right? Like not wanting to, there's a sense that not, you don't want me to really go talk about your emotions because men shouldn't have to. So I started seeing that as an issue, and for me it was new. I know there's a lot of conversation around it even now, but as I was going through it, it really came to the surface for me. So part of then what happened was, as I was also trying to figure out my purpose in life in terms of, okay, what do I do want to do with my career? And it was all, everything was shifting at once. And I also looked at it as, okay, this is my opportunity to start life completely fresh, completely new. As I was going through this big transformation in my life. So this idea came to me that perhaps I can be an advocate for other men who are also struggling in similar ways. It doesn't always have to be divorce, could be other things that we all experience in life. So how could I be an advocate for other men? And I didn't really know what that looked like. So first I went and got certified as a coach. And then I was thinking about, okay, I really want to become a therapist. So I started studying psychology. I got a couple of books and I really enjoyed it. So when the pandemic hit, I applied for a master's in psychology. And then, yeah, I started working with other people, especially men, in the last year and a half. Initially, it was more of a coaching approach. But then I did my practicum late last year and I got my degree in psychology. So now I'm working as a therapist, too. But yeah, just going through this experience, working with people, just using some of my own life experiences to ask them questions and help guide them in some of the things they are dealing with has really allowed me to see that this is where I'm meant to be, at least for now. And then who knows what the future holds.
Lovely. That's really lovely. So, I mean, your book, Pursuit of Self-Love, 30 Uplifting Messages and the Reflections, offers the insights into the journey of the self-discovery. So what inspired you to write this book, and what are the key messages you hope readers take away?
Yeah, I could share what inspired me for sure. I think as I was going through a separation and divorce, I jumped into another relationship. And that to me felt like a band-aid fix. I think looking back, there was this aspect of anxiety for me around being alone, not being in a relationship. And there was some comfort I got from being in another relationship. And even though it wasn't working well, I think for me, there were still a lot of things that I hadn't healed that kept coming to the surface. And that was causing a lot of conflict in the relationship. So when that relationship ended, I still kind of was chasing. I was trying to get in, you know, meet women, kind of got into a bit of substance abuse, and I was just sacrificing myself because I, like I said, I had this anxiety around being alone at home. So I would just put myself in social situations that prevented me from being alone, but there was no connection. It was, everyone was kind of chasing the same things. And it was like this short-term gratification, cheap dopamine spikes, as I like to say. And then that, I had one night where it was rough, and the next morning I woke up and I just had no clue what had gone on, and I was just very embarrassed at how things may have happened. Again, I had no recollection, and that's the day I kind of made a commitment to myself that, okay, you know what? What am I doing here? This is not something I'm proud of. So I started focusing on, I started small. I was like, okay, I'm going to commit to sleeping properly and eating healthy. And I kind of set a goal for 2 weeks. And in that 2 weeks, I really committed to it. And I started feeling amazing. Like I felt great to the point where that 2 weeks were coming to an end. I'm like, I don't know if I want to end this. I want to keep this going and see where this goes. And what that allowed me to do then was, because I wasn't going out and putting myself in social situations, I really found over the course of several months, I found this ability to be in solitude, as I like to explain, and reconnect with myself. I was able to find love for myself. And that was the whole idea behind Pursuit of Self-Love. It's something I had to consciously do. And a lot of the times when I was alone, I was having a lot of these reflections and insights for myself. I started journaling more on a consistent basis. Before, it was something I would just do sporadically, but then it really became a part of my practice. And I would just journal for, sometimes it could be for a really, really long time. So what I came to realize is what prevented me from journaling it was I didn't know what to write about. And I hear that with a lot of people that I work with is, okay, I don't know what I'm going to journal about. So that's the other component I built into the book, was I shared some of my own thoughts and reflections that I had when I was in those moments of solitude. And I share those with the reader. And then I ask them questions in terms of, okay, what does this thought or reflection mean to you? And then I've provided space in the book for people to journal. So that's where there's these 30 thoughts and reflections with questions, prompts for the reader that they can use then to fill it out as they see fit, as more of a journaling practice. And that's my hope, is if you can do that consistently for a month or 2 months, you can really build that habit into your life.
Understood. So, Let's talk about the intersection of the mental health and the spirituality. Like, how do you incorporate this spiritual practices or the beliefs into your therapy sessions or the coaching work?
Yeah, so I think it depends on the individual. It's not something I completely apply to every client. It depends where they are and if they're ready to make that connection. I've had clients that have come in and they feel like that there's something missing. And we'll talk about some of the mental health stuff. We'll focus on their anxiety and depression. But then at some point, they get to the place where, okay, there's got to be more here. And that's when I'm like, okay, this person might be ready. There's a lot of times where intuitively I know when I see the client that perhaps there is that connection that they have, or it's not there, but they're seeking it. So I'll prompt them. I'll ask them, okay, well, what's your belief about the universe? Do you believe in a God, or what's your practice when it comes to spirituality? And I'll see that light flicker in their eyes because they feel like, okay, he's asking me something that I've been thinking about. So a lot of the times I also use intuition. Now, why do I make that connection? Because I think at the end of the day, whether it's anxiety or depression we're struggling with, majority of the times I found, and this is also based on personal experience, is because we're lacking a connection with ourselves. And this is not a simple like, oh, you spend time and you reflect or you go for a walk. No, when I say connection with the self, I'm meaning it at a very, very deep level. And to me, that's a very profound spiritual connection that you can have. So once you're able to connect with yourself, you are able to also connect with the rest of the world, the universe, or other people more from a deeper soul level. So that's how I envision it. Now, for me, I am a Muslim faith, so I have my own religious practices that I do, and I've also built my own spiritual practices where I like to go out into nature and just connect with everything around me, and I find a lot of peace and grounding through that. But everyone's process is different. Everyone has their own way of connecting with themselves. So that's where I will work with the individual to understand where they get that feeling. And sometimes it is through whatever faith-based system they are. If there's a specific religion they follow, maybe it's using some of those practices. Maybe it's something you can build on your own. For some people, it could just be meditation, as simple as that, right? So okay, it's finding what works for you, what's a good fit. For me, like I said, it varies depending on the day. If I feel like sometimes I'm really disconnected, I try to bring in a lot of things. Maybe it's going for yoga, maybe it's going for meditation, whatever it is, I know I need. So I think once you get to that point, you also get more aware of how you're able to find that connection. But that takes time and practice.
Understood. Exactly. So, also wondering, like, how can the individuals cultivate a deeper connection between their mental well-being and their spiritual journey?
Well, I think, as I kind of alluded to earlier, if you're struggling, like a lot of the times the mental health challenges that I see are self-induced. So maybe you're watching your friends on social media and you assume you're comparing yourselves to them, and you assume that, oh, everyone's life is great except mine. So then you start experiencing depression, right? Or you're always worried about some future event that, oh, and I have anxiety because I have to pay this bill, or I have to go on this trip, or I have to see my family member, whatever it is that's creating anxiety. It could be work related too. When I say connecting to yourself and grounding yourself, however you find that spiritual practice or whatever you do, you're able to come back to the present. And I know that sounds cliche because everyone talks about being in the present moment, but really it is that, where you can then, for me, at least the way it works is, how can I accept everything that's happening to me? How can I let go? So not having that sense of attachment, And that attachment could be to the future event, as I mentioned, or to the past. So how can you let go of that attachment and just become more aware of the present moment? So that's kind of been my approach, because then once you're able to ground yourself and get more aligned in the present moment, then it doesn't matter what's going to happen in the future, because all you can control is what is in front of you right now. Right? That's all you can control. Sometimes we try to control everything. We want to control how other people are going to react. We want to control what's going to happen in the future. But when you're able to, again, ground yourself and become more present, you realize that 95% of those things you can't control. The only thing you can control is how you're going to respond. And how you need to respond today is going to be different than how you need to respond tomorrow, because you don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. So just having that internal dialogue with yourself can really help grounding yourself. And that's where I think it can help with some of these mental health challenges that we bring into our own lives. It's the same with the past, right? Letting go of the past, as I mentioned, if you continue to ruminate on the past, or if you continue to compare your life to someone else's, you are bound to experience depression. But that's where that acceptance is so important, that accepting that, okay, this is my life. I'm doing the best I can. How can I find joy in all the things that are happening around me? And I don't like to tell people that, oh, you do it once and boom, all your problems will go away and everything is solved. This is like a daily battle, at least the way I see it. We all struggle with this every day. So that's why it's important to have certain practices that allow you to disconnect from the world. Because again, we're so digitally connected with each other, which creates a lot of these problems too. So having a daily practice that is often non-negotiable, because you know you need it. And that's kind of what's helped me with my mental health. Because if I don't follow my daily practices, they can fall off the side, and then my mental health can deteriorate. But I have to be proactive, knowing that if I don't follow these practices, I know what can happen as well.
Exactly. Exactly true. Mm-hmm. So, in your experience, what role does the self-love play in maintaining the mental wellness, especially during the challenging times?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think at the end of the day, you have to be your biggest ally. And the reason why I shared my story with jumping into another relationship after my divorce was because I thought if someone else could love me, I would feel good. I would feel better about myself. But that is like anything we tend to chase, right? We can continue to be in that hamster wheel, but it's an endless pursuit. So the self-love is really what helps you, because if you're able to give yourself the things that you need and you can love yourself like you want to be loved, then that can help with your mental health as well. That's kind of what happened for me. I was able to give myself the things that I was seeking in others. And it was just having this unconditional love for myself that helped me, acceptance for myself, knowing that I was doing the best I can, knowing that I'm going to make mistakes and how can I forgive myself and move past them, being able to just not compare myself to others and not have these unhealthy expectations, not only of myself, but other people around me. So there's a lot of letting go of attachments. There was a lot of acceptance and forgiveness for myself in the moment. So that to me is all an aspect of self-love. And if we can't give it to ourselves, that's where we often fall into this trap. And a lot of the times this trap leads to us having certain mental health problems.
Understood. So how do you approach the topic of shame, especially within the cultural context where certain life events like the divorce can carry a stigma?
Yeah, so shame is a difficult one, because I think we all struggle with shame. I think men have a different version of shame than women. I'm not saying one is easier or harder than the other. It's just culturally we experience shame differently as men and women. I think for men, at least I can speak from experience, there's that shame of having emotions and not keeping it together. I felt a lot of emotions when I was going through a divorce. The aspect of a failed relationship, again, for me, success looked like you had everything. You know, your finances were in good place. You had the house, you had the car, and you had a successful relationship. So when that relationship fell apart, there was shame from that. And then there's also shame I experienced from my family for, again, failing at a relationship. And I say that quote unquote because that's what society considers it. So recognizing that shame will always be there. And what I try to teach people, and this is no secret because we all know this around shame, that shame thrives on secrecy. So if I'm going to not tell people, oh, I'm going through a divorce because I'm so feeling like it's a failure and I experience shame, then guess what? That shame is going to continue to build up in the background. If I'm going to use perfectionism as a way to disguise the shame, well, I'm going to fall into that shame spiral because things will never be perfect. I can continue that chase, and anytime I fall short, I'm going to experience shame. If I'm going to use other emotions, like anger is one of them that men often use to disguise that shame. Again, these are all band-aid fixes. They're not dealing with the root issue. And where's that shame coming from? So for me, it was just coming from a sense of failure. And that's what I had to navigate. But that's where, again, because we're trying to run from this shame, we experience anxiety. That's where you see it a lot of the times, where people are feeling anxious, because I know clients that are anxious to go to the gym because they're worried that people are going to make fun of them, or because they don't know how to exercise, they're going to look stupid. There's that anxiety there. But what is the cause of that anxiety? It's shame. Because I'm not going to look good enough. I'm not going to feel worthy. So then you feel that shame, and then you experience anxiety because you're so worried about facing that shame. And then you become like paralyzed. It's very debilitating.
Understood. So looking ahead, what are your hopes for the future of mental health advocacy, particularly in destigmatizing the conversations around men's mental health and the spirituality? Mm-hmm.
Well, I think a lot of these conversations, like I have my own podcast, but then having other people doing podcasts like yourself and having these conversations is a great way of us exploring it, right? The more conversations we have, the more we normalize it, the better it is. And there's obviously been a shift. I've noticed it too over the last 5-6 years, where more and more people are being open about their mental health. I do caution that, because we don't want to use these conversations as a form of debilitating ourselves, saying, hey, I have mental health struggles and these are all the reasons why I can't do these things. No, I think it's putting a name to it, but then also using it as a form of resilience, as you touched on earlier, is yes, we're going to experience difficult situations. We're going to experience adversity, but how can we use these experiences to navigate through our struggles? So I think we're heading in the right direction. We're having great conversations. We are making a lot of these conversations normal, right? And that breaks the stigma down. And that's kind of the same idea with shame, as I was touching on earlier. If we don't have these conversations, then we continue to hide and disguise it. But the fact that we're doing this is great. And for myself personally, on an individual level, I think just being an advocate and doing the work I'm doing, whether it's through the podcast or the men's groups I'm a part of, that's my hope. And the more honest I am about my story, that's my way of serving as well, in terms of making it more of a discussion point rather than keeping it in secret.
That's really lovely. Great. So thank you for joining, Furkan. And in today's conversation, dear listeners, with Furkan has been deeply insightful, valuable perspectives on the intersection of mental health and the spirituality. So here today we have learned about his personal journey of the self-discovery, the dedication to supporting men's mental health, and the transformative power of embracing the vulnerability and the self-love. So as we navigate our own paths, we may continue to explore the connections between our mental well-being and our spiritual growth. So always remember that seeking support and prioritizing our holistic health are the essential steps on the journey towards healing and fulfillment. So thank you for everyone for joining us. And until next time, take care of your mind, body, and the spirit. Thank you so much.